CliffCentral.com.
All right. Well, it is just about time for us to check in on This Is Us. It's, of course, what we do once a week here on the show, an edition that we are happy to bring to you this morning. We share a mutual concern in This Is Us in finding new solutions through new ideas, new alliances, and we try to overcome the myriad of obstacles that are currently facing South Africa. Every week, we introduce you to some of the thought leaders and visionaries that we can find. Today is no different. I know Yatish is having a couple of problems with load shedding, which frankly we all are, so I understand that. So he may or may not join us in time to welcome Rob. But today we chat to the editor of the Financial Mail, Rob Rose. He's a legendary journalist who, after obtaining a law degree, took on the financial fraud and corporate governance beats at the Business Day newspaper before moving to the Financial Mail in 2007. And he is famously the guy who managed to find out about that whole scam that happened, a very ugly and realistic and problematic scam where I think it was Barry Tannenbaum built up a Ponzi scheme of his own. And Rob was the guy who managed to uncover that. He also, of course, won numerous awards, including the Tucker Caper Award for Investigative Journalism, the Sanlam Financial Journalist of the Year, and he was awarded a Nieman Scholarship fellowship to Harvard University back in 2010. So today we'll speak a little bit about the role of the media in reconciliation, in fostering social cohesion, and also talking about the role of the media now in a world of fake news. So I'm very happy to have Rob welcome to the show. Bakabantu, we'll check in with you on Thursday.
Hello.
Good stuff, man. Very good. Cheers. There's Bakabantu on his way out and Rob on his way in. How do you do, Rob? Nice to see you.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah, thanks, man. Good to be here.
It's very good to see you again. And listen, I mean, going through your CV, we were just talking a little bit earlier before you joined us about CVs and how awful it is to have to try and put your own CV together because you look at it in Lebang, in my case, and you go, oh, wow, is that all I've done? When I hear your CV and I've left out a lot of it, we're like, wow. Now we really feel like losers.
I've just put everything I've ever done in there. That's all.
It's incredible. So, all right, we need to get into what it is that the media does that is good and what the media does that is bad when it comes to the idea of nation building. Now, obviously, Rob, this is complicated because there is no obligation on the media to try and be patriotic and positive and optimistic about a country. In fact, the media is very often the institution, and I mean an institution in the broadest possible sense because you get all kinds of people in the media business, that is meant to hold to account the people who are trying to build this idea of, you know, patriotism and nation building. And actually, sometimes the media does a very good job of undermining that stuff when it's nonsense. But also these days, you see a lot of fake news. You see a lot of people who say, oh, well, the media is actually part of the problem. You hear it from politicians in particular. How do you think in South Africa the media has performed over the last 27 years of democracy? And where you think we could have gone right and wrong if we were paying attention to the media?
Well, you know, I mean, the media is quite a broad thing to talk about media. There are these figures and these statistics that come out about, you know, trust in media, but it includes everything from like Twitter and Facebook to, you know, Amar Bongani and Daily Maverick. So it's quite it's quite a wide ambit in which that operates. But I think generally, I mean, the media has done pretty well. It was quite a strong force for against the apartheid state in the 90s and 80s and 70s, in the face of really quite brutal strictures, you know. And I think that in the last couple of years, there's been some fantastic reporting on things like, you know, things like state capture, on things like, you know, the Guptas. I think it was the media who reported on it. And I think that if you look at a country like this, you know, the NPA and those guys just don't seem to do anything for years. I mean, people rely on the media to get stories out. Okay. Whistleblowers come to the media because going to government authority, firstly, you don't know who you can trust in government often. And secondly, you know, often those kind of cases go nowhere. So I think it's done a pretty good job. I mean, there's always going to be frailties in media, and media newspapers and, you know, broadsheets have always been, there's always been good stuff and bad stuff throughout history. But I think overall it's done pretty well. And I think it's done a pretty good job of stepping in where the authorities haven't moved in, you know, they haven't done their job. So people rely on it, I think, a lot more.
Now, we often talk about how the media world has become disintermediated, and we talk about platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And do you believe that they've done more good than bad? Because this is an ongoing conversation. If I think about not even media conversations I'm having with people who are in that world, just friends of mine, we talk about whether or not you can believe half the things you see, and whether platforms like these have done more damage than good, whether they're actually a net benefit or a net negative to living in a world where so much information isn't necessarily passed through any kind of filter at all. And when it is passed through a filter, sometimes even the filter's suspicious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I do think that's true. And I do think the danger of the social media sites like Facebook, for example, got into a lot of trouble for specifically selecting stuff that just confirmed people's biases.
Yeah.
So if you believe, for example, that Russia is out there to save Ukraine and it's out there on a peacekeeping mission, and that's what you look for on Facebook, that's the information Facebook will feed to you. And you'll get that, and you won't see any alternative view on that. So you have
or you a confirmation can just ask, bias. Scenario. Or you can just ask Fikile Mbalula. He'll say the same thing.
But he's in Ukraine, isn't he? Oh, he's not. Actually.
No, I think he's gone to Russia. Didn't he go to Russia? Nobody seems to know. All right. So,
and then you look at Twitter as well. And Twitter, you select who you follow. You select your group of people. And if you want an echo chamber, you can create an echo chamber for yourself. And then you feel more validated with your particular biases. And you'll always find people who will corroborate that, you know. But it's not necessarily quality information. So I think it's kind of, you know, it's been good for democratization of this, you know, of information. But it has created a real danger that you can just build your biases around yourself and cotton wool yourself off from reality.
Do you get nervous when you hear the term citizen journalist?
No, I mean, it should be a good thing, no? I mean, people should bring, you know, citizen journalists is people reporting from places that normal journalists or other journalists don't go to, you know, like a lot of communities, they don't, you know, there are far fewer journalists operating now than there used to be, so they don't go into communities. So it's a good thing if communities have citizen journalists that bring information out. You just need to, you know, it's just like all journalism, you need to verify it and make sure it's accurate and as, you know, free of bias and subjectivity as possible, which is never entirely possible. But I mean, you try your best, you know.
But like, how do we actually do that, Rob? I feel like it's easy to say, you know, like verify, always get three credible sources, blah, blah, blah. I mean, do we really have time to sit and make sure that this one tweet that we're seeing is indeed fact? Like, where do you even start with this verifying thing? And that's why it's so easy for this fake news to spread into the, you know, to the ether.
It's true. But, you know, I mean, the odds of getting it wrong, if somebody, you know, you've seen numerous instances of tweets going out and then people assume it's correct, but it isn't, you know, and I think that's, you see so much stuff, so much fake news about what's happening. And I think that if you immediately react in a kind of very, very visceral and very reactive way to things like that, then you're part of the problem. So, I mean, I think we just have to spend the time to, you know, you can see it and think, well, that's interesting, but, you know, verify if it's true. And I think there are agencies that do that more than ever. And there's Africa Check, there's the BBC has quite a good fact-checking service because there's always these wild statistics that come out. I mean, I read one the other day about 4,000 policemen working who have criminal records. And I really, you know, I thought, wow, that's amazing. I mean, is that really true? And then you go and you spend just 5 minutes verifying it. And I think that makes you more comfortable with it. I know, you know, 20 years ago, people didn't have the internet. Our parents used to reel off ridiculous figures at, you know, at parties and say the most outrageous things, you know, like I invented the question mark. And you could not verify that. But now you can. You know?
But is it really? Okay, so I want to be super cynical for a minute and say fake news is not a problem. This is kind of what I believe, because we've always had bullshit out there. There's always been the National Enquirer saying, for example, that or even worse than that, you used to get those rag tabloid publications that used to say, you know, this person was abducted by aliens. This woman has three cattle growing in her stomach. This person had sex with a Yeti. You know, there used to be all these stories in the news, and they were in actual printed publications. They weren't just links on the internet or tweets that some idiot just typed up in their mom's basement. And it never really, you didn't need a fact-checking organization to tell you that was nonsense. People must figure it out themselves. And frankly, if you keep on being misled by bad information, that's really on you. I mean, even with COVID, for example, it turns out the people who are wasting our time the most were the people who were claiming to be the experts. All this nonsense about, I mean, we're still doing this theater in some ways, the masking and the social distancing, which did nothing. Even the CDC admits it now. It was all just theater to make us feel like we were doing something. The experts turned out.
Come on, Gareth, you're social distancing in your library. You're miles away from anyone.
I'm loving that, Rob. I'm not complaining about that at all. But the fact is that we don't need the fact checkers. We never did. You must just figure it out yourself. And if you do make a couple of missteps and it ends up costing you, that's on you.
I don't know, Gareth. We're trusting these people too much. These people can't think for themselves. They literally believe anything that they see. And that's the danger, is that they react to every bit of information. Whereas back in the day, if it was printed in like the newspapers, it was like maybe like a small little corner. Now it's on blast. That's the problem, I think. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is true. And I do think that, you know, the better solution obviously is not to close down anything, but to kind of have warnings around it. I mean, for example, you know, the New York Times, for example, is a fairly gets things right. And when they get things wrong, they apologize for it. And I think that that builds trust in the particular institution. But you have this debate at the moment with Joe Rogan, for example, on Spotify. You know, he had people on his show and he made some outrageous remarks, his guest, and, you know, it led to a big groundswell against him from people. And the issue is, what do you do about that? Do you ban someone entirely? And I don't know if that's the right approach, because I think you need to do as much as you can to correct issues and put the correct information out there. But it's a slippery slope when you ban people entirely. I think you can, you know, individual platforms like Spotify, like YouTube, have their right to say, you can't be on our platform.
Sure.
And I think that's maybe a better approach. But to ban someone entirely, then you risk going the Russia route, where if someone says something
Absolutely.
You don't like.
I mean, even in the case of the Russia route, now I see that they've taken RT off of so many of the channels all over the world. I kind of want to know what their propaganda angle is. And to me, it's more useful to see that, even though we know it's propaganda, because it comes straight out of Vladimir Putin's kind of propaganda center. And we know that the Russians are particularly good at controlling and putting out fake narratives on the internet as well. If you know that, it helps you to figure out what's going on, but you want to see what they're up to. You don't want them to be hiding in places where you can't see them anymore. Also, we're eventually going to end up in a purity Olympics where every media organization is going to be held to the absolute highest standard, an impossibly high standard, where no mistakes will be tolerated at all. There are going to be mistakes. You even mentioned the New York Times. They've made mistakes. Everybody does at some point. And if it's going to be a purity Olympics, no one's good enough. Then we won't have any news. Then we've shut down everything because we've banned everyone who isn't always 100% correct. Pointless.
Completely. You're completely right. I mean, everyone makes mistakes. I've made mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. And that's the point about it. It's called the first draft of history for a reason, because you don't always get it right, you know?
There we go.
Which is why you have to be more tolerant of that. And I do think that Russia today is a good example, but that was because of the sanctions in Europe that the feed was cut off. I liked seeing Russia today because it does give you the undiluted picture of the propaganda. But to kind of use an economic analogy, in a sense, there was market failure to some extent, because Russians don't have the full scope of all media to judge from. They can't they can't take Russia Today against what the internet's saying or what the Washington Post says about this. They only have that propaganda channel.
Right.
So it completely has fed them a lie. And I think that a lot of Russians, the ones you see in Ukraine, are starting to realize it. And it's had quite a dangerous impact on that society. But that's because it's not a free information economy at all. So it has created what you could, in economic terms, deem a market failure. But I think in general, the view is to have more information sources from which you can pick the good ones and you build trust. Like the notion of trust in media, if you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer, which judges trust around the world, it for example, it gives media not a great ranking. It gives nobody a great ranking, actually. But then it breaks it down. Social media gets a much lower ranking, and say, you know, institutions like the New York Times will get a much higher ranking. So I think people intuitively figure out who to trust more and who to trust less. And I think that's a better way to do things.
It used to be, let's go back in history for a little bit. It used to be the media versus the government, because the government were always in a position to shut down whatever outlets they didn't like. Now, of course, we've got big tech that also shut down whatever outlets they don't like. They also prioritize. If you Google search certain things, certain stuff gets prioritized over other stuff. You have to scroll through 20 pages to find a link that maybe Google haven't put near the top of the search results because someone isn't paying them to do that. Government is not the only thing that the media needs to be worried about these days, right? Because there are other media outlets that are also trying to get them cancelled and shut down just for competitive reasons. I mean, you can see this happening. People go after the sponsors of certain media channels because they don't want them to be in existence because they're hoping to either get that sponsorship money themselves or they just want to shut down a voice that they don't approve of. So the enemies for the media organizations that are trying, let's just assume they're in good faith, trying to tell the news as honestly as they can, right? Trying to do the stuff that they think people want to know about, give people useful, valid, relevant information. Let's imagine that's the case. There are so many enemies at the gates waiting to get in the way of them being able to send that information out to their audiences. It's hard to just blame government these days. They're not the only problem in the room.
No, for sure. I mean, I do think that you're right, that there are loads of people who have taken an overly interventionist view on other media, and they want to, you know, if they see something that they don't like or they think is wrong, they immediately want to get into it and stop it happening. But it is difficult. I mean, I don't think it's a messy world when you have so many diffuse media sources. I mean, Gareth, how do you, for example, deal with the views of people who would say, you know, if you invite somebody on your show who denies COVID, who says it's, you know, who spreads the information that is just very dangerous and tells everyone else to go and drink hydroxychloroquine? I mean, there is a limit where it basically, sorry, my Siri was telling me it doesn't understand what I'm saying.
Careful, if Siri only got the end of that question, they're going to call you an anti-vaxxer and COVID denier.
There's a spectrum, right, where it goes from people discussing things that might not be true and making genuine mistakes to something that is intentionally propagandistic to something that can be very harmful. I think that it does go right across the spectrum.
Absolutely. But the answer is to have more conversations and to bring those people in and to actually interrogate their stupid ideas. I mean, if there are people with really dumb ideas in the world, the only way that you sort those ideas out is to bring more light to them and force them to account for their beliefs. It's never been the case that people will be persuaded away from something by you banning them. In fact, that usually makes them think that they're onto something. I mean, how many of us I've encountered them, these conspiracy theorists who think the most wacky things you could possibly imagine about, like, the Illuminati and, you know, how the whole world is controlled by George Soros and Bill Gates. You meet these people, and there's no way you can, by banning them, by saying, well, I'm not going to tolerate you talking such nonsense, they're certainly not going to change their mind. Then they're going to go, you're part of the machine that's trying to control me. The only way to deal with those people is to talk it through and often to present them with undeniable evidence, which puts them in the position where they end up defending something indefensible and silly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that just to talk about that Edelman Trust thing again, they talk about people who are well-informed. And they have a couple of characteristics, you know, guys who consult, for example, three news sources a day and they read, you know, they consult news sources with which they disagree. And they check information against multiple sources. I mean, those are the kind of things that matter. Where you don't just read about the George Soros thing from one source. You have a look around and you see, like, who else disagrees with it. And I think you build a real ecosystem in which information is verified. What you shouldn't be doing is trying to prevent those people from saying anything, because then those views are out there. And then when it does actually surface somewhere, chances are you'll believe it.
And frankly, if you're going to believe in stupid stuff, we want to have a record of you believing in stupid stuff. We don't want them deleting your Twitter account and then you disappear into the ether, so that one day when we're trying to hire you for a job and we look at your CV and you've been saying absolutely outrageous and stupid stuff on social media, we don't know that you should be avoided at all costs. You know, you're a crackpot.
Also, we have one transport minister already who believes in anything. We can't have too many people.
All right. Well, it is called This Is Us. So I want to just bring it back to precisely what the role of the media might be in your opinion. And again, you know, the reason we want you here on the show this morning is because you really have a depth of experience in the media world. But you also have, I think, a point of view which would be helpful and useful to those of us who don't know as much as you do about the media. What can be done, and what is the role of media in things like democracy, social cohesion, inclusion, that kind of thing. Do you think there is a role for media, or do you think that their role is just to be objective storytellers?
No, I mean, you've got to tell stories about stories that illuminate your existence, and I think tell people about what's happening. I mean, there's a couple of ways you do it. I mean, you provoke people, you entertain them, you educate them, you do all the kind of the traditional things that people are supposed to do. But for example, we have a budget that comes out once a year, and you could say intuitively the media's job is to tell people what's in the budget and what that means for their lives. You know, is my social grant going up? Is my tax going up? That kind of thing. But then you also have situations where the media can draw attention to the things that aren't working in your society and bring it to the attention of policymakers and say to these guys, this isn't working and everyone knows it, and fix it. And I think that's where the media does a particularly good job, is that it's in this country, you talk about nation building, and I do think media should be nation building, but where politicians often misunderstand the role of media is they think nation building is just to parrot the good things and what they say. And you see that a lot of the times, and you see it in countries like Russia where they and China, where if you say anything negative, it's viewed as not nation building. But actually in a country like ours, what we've done, the media's helped build the nation by exposing the faults in our society. And they've done it, you know, with apartheid. They've like, this is not working. The society dislikes it. It's iniquitous. It's against human rights. It's just not, the whole world hates us. It's an evil system. And I think the media helped bring that to expose that. And that was nation building, even though it was flagging the negative realities of the government at the time. And I think our job is to make society stronger by flagging the things that aren't working. And I think that is where the media does a particularly good job. It's not just about information and conveying information, but it's about building societies by drawing attention to the things that people might not see. I mean, I know a lot of government ministers that just want, that have praise singers around them, and yes men, they'll never have people tell them what they don't want to hear, you know? So that's our job, is to say, Fikile Mbalula, you are just making things up, and Enatus is, you know, the worst thing in the world ever. It's our job to do that. And I think that's how you make society stronger.
But Rob, what's the responsibility that like each individual has with regards to, you know, shuffling out the fluff and making sure that they are believing the things that are true and really not putting too much attention on maybe the negative stuff or the fake news? Like, as just an average South African sitting here at home wanting tomorrow to be better, how can I sort of change my view or how I use social media or media in general, how I consume it and how I reshare it for the greater good of seeing the country be better tomorrow?
I mean, I don't. That's a good question, and I'm not quite sure how to answer that. But I think that it's about basically reading more and just basically consuming more, not less, and different sources and stuff you don't agree with. I mean, I've got lots of people I read that I don't agree with and infuriates me. But you got to do it. You know, you have to find out, what was Vladimir Putin really wanting in the Ukraine? Why does he feel so aggrieved? You can't just, you know, these. If you don't do that, you'll have this really unhelpful binary in your head of like, you know, he's an evil man, and like evil is such a useless definition of someone. It doesn't illuminate anything.
Yeah.
So I think you have to just be smarter about stuff, read more, take your time over stuff. I mean, there's no reason not to. But there are people who willfully, you know, you see stuff on Twitter where people have seen something that's 5 years old and will say, this is happening right now in Alexandria, which just isn't true. But that's because their biases make them believe it's true. And I think it's our job not to just think, oh, well, you know, like, let's retweet that. So I think it's our job to build society by just checking stuff and just, you know, being part of the solution more. I mean, sorry to sound so wow.
But then a lot of media organizations, now it's become very en vogue to criticize the ANC in the last 2-3 years. But before that, you know, you had the Pray for Cyril Brigade. In fact, they're still out there. And even during the early days of Jacob Zuma, you had people who were loath to say anything bad about the ANC in the mainstream media. Now suddenly they're happy to do that. You know, the same thing happened with Julius Malema. For a while, he was the golden boy because he got you clicks and he got people attention, because that's what he does. He's very good at that. But there were certain things he said particularly, and the media is super sensitive whenever you criticize them. You know, the moment you say something about media freedom, then they turn on you. Then obviously you're a bad person. But before then, they were happy to hear your controversial views on pretty much anything. We've seen this change in South Africa. And then you hear them saying, well, being pro-ANC is not being pro-South Africa. And being negative about the ANC isn't being negative about South Africa. But these are the same people who were criticizing those of us who were saying things about the ANC 10 years ago, saying, oh, you're being unpatriotic and you're racist and you're just against the ANC and all of that nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that like views like patriotism, I mean, I don't really, your job as an information provider is to be objective and get things as accurate as possible. I mean, patriotism doesn't really come into it necessarily. If patriotism means that you're distorting the facts or lying about it to convey a particular bias, then I think that's extremely unhelpful. But I mean, you talk about Julius Malema, and I think that the extent to which Julius Malema and his EFF brigade attack journalists and attack people is quite intimidating. And I think that that's part of the reason their kind of very aggressive response to people like Polly van Wyk has made things a lot worse for journalists. People fear calling them out as much because of their aggression. And I think that that's a very dangerous way to go. I mean, I do think like there's been a lot of criticism of the ANC for quite a while, but I suppose, you know, journalists are people and they, you know, you strive for your objective, but subjectivity is always in there, really. You have your views on how things are going and, you know, you can report on the trains not working, you know, all our train tracks falling apart. And that's the objective reality. But, I mean, there are still people who have very clear biases in all the media organizations.
Sure.
Like SABC, for example, and Independent News and that sort of thing. And it's clearly things get distorted to present a specific viewpoint sometimes. But I think as long as you're trying to verify the accuracy of what you're saying and reduce that subjectivity as much as possible, you know, I mean, yeah, that's like I said, it's the first draft. You're going to get stuff wrong. But hopefully it ultimately in the final analysis, you generally have an improvement. You generally have something that's worthwhile protecting.
The last word is yours, Lebang.
I'm curious, Rob, about where we're going. So in your opinion, with all your great experience and being this legendary journalist that you are, what is the future? what's tomorrow looking like with regards to the use of media and how much we can trust it in terms of really telling a real and true South African story?
You know, I think like there's been this rise of kind of non-profit funded or, you know, pro-democracy organizations like Amo Bongani, Daily Maverick. I think Groundup does very well. I think a lot of those guys, they get funded because the commercial media model is really struggling. I mean, advertising, yeah, it's a small country. People struggle to get advertising and they struggle to get enough journalists. And as a result, you have fewer people covering stories and then the information is not as good as it was. So I think the media industry is, it's in a lot of trouble. But I do think there are, you know, organizations, like I said, that get pro-democracy funding and they've done pretty well. And I think that's going to continue. And I think that's going to become more of a feature.
Aren't you worried about where that money, that funding is coming, particularly because some of it comes with a bit of an agenda?
I mean, yeah, I mean, to some extent it does, but I think the best organizations, it's a well-worn time model. You look at ProPublica in the US and they raise funds, but then those funds are overseen by a board of trustees that makes sure that any of the agendas of the donors doesn't infiltrate the reporting. And I think that you have to do that when you have those kind of funders. You have to make sure that you provide those assurances so that your news is more trusted, so what you produce is more trusted. So I think you need to be aware of the agendas of your donors and make sure you ring fence that as much as possible. I mean, obviously you'll have organizations that will strive to do citizen journalism or this journalism or that journalism, and then the agendas are fairly out there and well known. But as long as you're still doing the basics, you know, you're still verifying stuff, you're still trying to improve things, I think that, you know, if that's what's needed to keep journalism alive and keep information more accurate in our society, then that's a good thing.
Rob, thank you so much for your time this morning. This is Us, is where we try to hold up a mirror to what we are as a country, to who we are as a country, and try to figure out the steps that we have to take to get there. And the media is a very important building block in our ability to figure out who we are, and also to be able to find the right answers to some very, very difficult questions. So I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and keep doing the great work that you're doing in the media world, because uncovering, as you did early on in your career, all these crooks and criminals is just a very, very important piece of the puzzle that we need to keep paying attention to, frankly. The state capture thing just continues to roll on as one of the most unbelievable examples of how little we knew about what was going on in our country. And thank God the media, the responsible media outlets, like the one that that you run, are the exact places that we get the information we need so desperately. So thank you very much. Very good to have Rob Rose, the Financial Mail editor, on this morning. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks Rob. Guys. And Gareth, I'll be sending lots of masks your way, so your social distance and safety. I know how you
I've got a pack of them like this in my car, and I don't know what I'm going to do when Cyril eventually announces that we've got to get rid of them, because I paid a lot of money for them. A whole 2 cents a mask or whatever. Thanks so much, Rob. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, Rob.
Bye-bye. Cliffcentral.com.